I'm Debbie Dashinger. Welcome to Dare to Dream. Be inspired to live big and bold and take action to turn your dreams into your reality. Go beyond obstacles and limits of your thinking. Accelerate results to catapult yourself to success. I'm a visibility expert who gives media makeovers to clients, booking them on media interviews and turning their books into international bestsellers with guaranteed results. Join me at DebbieDashinger.com. Dare to do great things. Dare to shine. It's all about you becoming a visionary and leading the pack. Welcome to your daring new life.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dane here and Access Consciousness. They do brilliant energy work around the world. You can attend their workshops, get their online programs, or become a facilitator. Dr. Dane, D-A-I-N, here, H-E-E-R.com, as well as accessconsciousness.com. Visit them today. The Dare to Dream podcast has been nominated for 2 People's Choice Podcast Awards and a Webby Award. Dare to Dream is ranked in the top 100 best podcasts in USA and self-improvement on all of Apple Podcasts, and ranks in the top 50 podcasts in many other countries as well, thanks to you. Debbie Dashinger is a certified coach whose expertise is visibility and media. She coaches people to write a page-turner book, takes their book to a guaranteed international bestseller status, and she pulls back the curtain so clients have the system to be interviewed on media and podcasts to get massive results. Debbie shows people how to find and use media exposure to locate their tribe, fill workshops, sell books, and gain exposure. You can connect with Debbie at DebbieDashinger.com. Also, get your free tools and templates. She's giving away a free complimentary guide for you about how you can get booked and how you can find out what your message is. Go to DebbieDashinger.com/message. My guest a little bit later on is Reuben Langdon. A little bit about him. Question is, if you want to explore science, spirituality, and virtual reality, Reuben Langdon is your guy. He's a voice actor, documentarian, actor, filmmaker, stuntman, video game star, and a fight and stunt coordinator. You have seen Reuben in Pirates of the Caribbean, the Power Rangers series, and Avatar, where he was the stunt double for Jake Sully's alien Avatar. Reuben shot to stardom in video games with leading roles as Ken Masters in Street Fighter and Dante in the Devil May Cry franchise. He's worked with actors Jackie Chan and Andy Serkis, as well as directors James Cameron, Peter Jackson, and Steven Spielberg. It was while working on James Cameron's Avatar that Reuben had his first UFO sighting, which sent him in the direction of ufology and the paranormal. So for over a decade, Reuben has been researching the extraterrestrial phenomenon. He's the host of the popular TV show Interview with Extradimensionals on the Gaia Network. And in 2013, he co-produced the 5-day event at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., called the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, which to date is the most comprehensive body of evidence and testimony delivered to the public on the ET subject matter. To find out more about him, go to reubenlangdon.com. This is Debbie Dashinger, Dare to Dream podcast and radio, and Reuben Langdon, welcome to Dare to Dream.
Hi, Debbie.
It's great to have you. Excellent, excellent. So, you know, I've done a lot of research on you, and I want to start out, it looks like you were born in Alaska, true or false?
Wow, true. Yes, you did do some research.
What was that like?
I don't remember. At the young age of, I think like 4, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. So I only have memories of snow being above my head. Just glimpses of the cats my mom used to have. I think being held by my dad and mom, and that's about it. I mean, there's not a whole lot of memory there.
Mm. And I heard something, you were being interviewed somewhere, and you were sharing something about a cult, that there was a brief period in your childhood where your parents were involved in a cult, and that a spiritual cult?
Yeah, my mom was involved with, I don't really want to name names because there's different ideas, but my idea of what a cult is, it was nothing heavy like, you know, sacrificing or anything like that. It was just like just a mind manipulation, buying into certain ideas and beliefs to go into fear, which we could say any, you know, mainstream religion is kind of a cult in a way. But in this sense, it was a sort of a new agey type teachings. And that was where I got a lot of the exposure to a lot of stuff I'm into now. At a young age, I was exposed to it. I didn't buy into it because I could see 10 steps ahead to where it had become sort of a cult type idea. And my mom was into that during my junior high and high school years. Fortunately, she met someone to help her kind of break free from that reality. And for the past 20 plus years, she's been living with her new partner in Green Bay, Wisconsin, cult free. So it was just a short blip on the radar in my life where I was experiencing that. And it wasn't anything malicious in the sense of just your typical manipulation and money power grabs. That's it. You know, again, we have that in religion now, we have that in politics, we have that everywhere. It's nothing to get to like, oh, cult, oh my God. Like, you know, like right now we have the NXIVM scandal and all of these other like major cults that are like just bad stuff. So it's nothing like that.
Cult-ish. Okay.
Cult-ish. Yeah.
Ish is my favorite word on the planet. Yeah. It's really not a commitment word. I like it a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's so cool that I got to meet you and spend time with you before I got to really plow into your work. I actually prefer that. I love to get a vibe for somebody first and feel that connection.
Sure.
And then I can go out and research you and you can blow my mind. So your stunt reels, I mean, you're a beast. I do not even understand that. It's so impressive, really so impressive. Did you play sports as a kid? Where does all of that come from, that ability?
Focus. No, I was actually the biggest nerd growing up in school. I hated sports. That was actually, PE was the subject I hated the most.
Huh.
I was not very good at like team sports, but I did enjoy the outdoors. I got into rock climbing at a young age. And I liked sort of adrenaline type stuff. So rock climbing, I used to go climb up water towers in the middle of the night in Atlanta, Georgia, in the rural areas, and set up ropes and rappel off of them.
Oh God!
For thrills.
Your mother.
And I would do it like Australian style. So you kind of just jump off the building and you're in a sense a controlled free fall. And I did all kinds of crazy stuff like that as a kid. So I had this adrenaline. I had enough of a physical ability to not kill myself during those those operations. But when it came to sports, I was not the sports guy. I had an interest in martial arts, but never thought I could do it myself until I moved to Japan at the young age of 19. And martial arts was everywhere, being in that culture. So I signed up for some classes and I started taking Aikido. And that was my first martial arts. So I picked it up really fast.
You picked it up really fast at 19. That's amazing.
So I didn't start my real journey into stunts and sort of physical abilities of focused anything until really it was the age of 19, 20-ish. And I was behind the curve on the martial arts side because most kids and stunt people who had a career in it had started at a very young age, either in gymnastics or martial arts or something like that. So I had a lot to catch up on, but I luckily for me, when I just put my mind to something, I go all in, and I didn't let it hold me back, and studied in Japan while I was living there daily. That was, I had daily classes in acting, martial arts, stunt acting, gymnastics, sword play, anything I could get my hands on to get to that place of being like this action guy. That was my focus.
And in your reel, it shows these incredible feats. You know, you're being thrown from something onto something that appears to be very hard. It shows you being literally your whole body being thrown into trees and kicking people in a 360.
Yeah.
So have you ever had an injury?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Are you going to like point out broken arm?
Yeah, I got a broken collarbone here. You know, it's and I've got a broken ankle they're mended now, but they're still out of proportion from what they used to be. Broken tailbone, broken fingers. So it comes part of the territory. Is you break things, you get bruised up, you get beat up. It's when you're, things happen, you know, when you're doing it, the idea is to do it without getting hurt. And most of the ones in my reel, actually, those are all ones I got walked away from and did many takes, never had any serious injuries there. It's the little stuff when you're not paying attention that you get injured in.
You're a member of a group, a California martial arts stunt group called Zero Gravity. What is that like when you get together? Do you punch each other or?
Yeah, that group's no longer together. It was a group of guys from Northern California who were moving down to Southern California. And at the time, my style of martial arts, which came from living and working in Japan and Hong Kong and sort of the Jackie Chan style of things, that wasn't really it was just starting to make its way into Hollywood with, you know, advent of The Matrix and Charlie's Angels and other films that took on that type of style of action cinema. Power Rangers was one. And these guys kind of had that flavor and flair. And I invited them to come and train with my buddy, and I were running classes. My buddy from Korea, the Hapkido champion. And we invited them to come and train with us and work with us. And then we just decided to merge our groups. We had a small group already, and we were sort of going under the Zero Gravity team name for a little bit. And then everybody just kind of got busy and doing their own thing. And now most of the Zero Gravity members can be seen in all the major Hollywood films, Avengers, Black Panther, any big Hollywood film that you see out there, including the new Mandalorian project. All of these guys are all stunt performers and choreographers and sort of have made a name for themselves in the Hollywood industry.
So cool. And it's amazing how dispersed your interests are. It's great you follow them all. Mm-hmm. They're not just hobbies. So you've been passionate about this film, and we just shared before we started filming here that you just put in a lot more work on this. It's called Citizen Hearing on Disclosure. Very, very interesting. The film that you worked on documents 40 researchers along with military and agency and political people of really high rank, and they all testify to the United States Congress. So what does the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure set out to accomplish? Why that film?
Well, it's not a film. It's actually, it was two things. In its initial inception, it was going to be an event, which it was, that part we got through. That happened in 2013 at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., a couple blocks from the White House. And the event was filmed, and it was a mock congressional hearing with six former members of Congress, because the motto was, if Congress won't do their job, then the people will. Mm-hmm. So we initiated the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, a mock congressional hearings to hold hearings on the subject matter that the human race is being engaged by extraterrestrials. The evidence is there, the witnesses are there,
These are real witnesses. These are people who really put their hand on proof, scientific proof, personal experience.
Exactly. And mostly they're ex-government and military officials. And we tend in our society to take those people more credible, because if they've held some sort of security position, like we have head of SAC nuke bases, we have, you know, the former head of investigations of the FAA, we had other pilots, airline pilots, as well as military pilots from South America and from Europe as well. We had many airmen. So a lot of military officials, it just for more for the gravitas of it. We had 6 former members of Congress, 3 who had just retired just a couple months prior, and the others were one senator, a senator from Alaska, Senator Gravel, who actually was in charge for releasing the Pentagon Papers back during the Nixon era. So we had some heavy hitters, people who the goal was for the media to catch on and to then report on this, because it's a serious issue that's been laughed at for a long time. And we thought, well, what better way to convince the media, which then could report on this, if we just get all the heavy hitters together in one room? So it happened. 5 days, over 40 hours of testimony. So over 30 hours of testimony, and over 40 witnesses. Now, what that proved to me after doing that, I thought, this is it. We're going to have disclosure. No, you cannot put a cap on this event. Like, it's too big. It is a multi-million-dollar budget. And we were filming a movie around it too, simultaneously. The movie, unfortunately, due to some issues with funding, we had to can it. So we did the event. We live streamed it, invited all the press to come down and listen to the testimony and talk to the witnesses and interact with the Congress members. And what I realized is there truly is a truth embargo on the media, and that the media in a whole is, for the most part, being controlled by some special interest groups. At the time, I heard that from other people. I'm like, no, this will do it. This will blow the whistle. We've got this. We're going to get it out there. And during the event, seeing how the news handled it and seeing the ridicule and seeing the way that it was stifled and not investigated like a proper journalist should do proper research and talk to these people and look at the evidence and actually do their job if they were a real journalist. And that did not happen. So I got very discouraged after this event and realized that the problem is much bigger than what we could even imagine. And we're starting to understand this and see this now, with all the political games that are going on. But it's not until now. And if I tried to talk to people at that time in 2013 about the citizen hearing, what's happening, the government and the politics and the international banking cartels and what we know now is the cabal and all of this stuff, people were just laughing at me and just like, what are you talking about, Ruben? You're nuts. Now I could have that conversation with more and more people and I'm not so nutso. So it's it's interesting. But that series, that event was recorded, and it's we're getting ready to have a major re-release of that documentation. So I'm excited to help bring that to the world to try to see for a second time. And I think now people are going to be more open to it than ever before.
Did you consider this a historic event?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How so?
Well, I think we're about to find out. Once it gets re-released, I think people will, if given the chance to listen to it, to pay attention to it, then it paints a clear picture why the UFO subject has been covered up, why it continues to be covered up, and the different agendas behind the cover up and the players involved.
Okay, so people who are interested, who would like to see this, because it is available, can go to...
It's available now, yes.
Citizenhearing.org?
Correct.
Okay, fantastic. So you can watch the footage of these really brave people giving testimonies. I think you'll be very impressed by who steps up and a lot of what they have to say and share. And so I want to bounce around a little bit, because it has me curious. When you say that and you talk about the cover-up, so then it makes me wonder. So you're doing the show, season two, we're all out here waiting for season three. And this is Interview with ED, which is a hilarious name, by the way. Think about it. Just saying.
Yeah,
but what he means is extra dimensional. So Interview with Extra Dimensional. So, you know, this is a great show. Because I'm here with you because it changed my life, right? It opened me up in a huge way. And we can share more about that later. But this is about you. And I really want to focus on this. How has the media treated you? How has your show been received out in the world?
Well, it's been well received throughout the world, as well as the Citizen Hearing was as well when it was initially launched. It's not the world that has a problem with these types of shows. It's the control and power structures of the planet. Now with my show, Ed, the reason I took that angle and the reason I went down that path of interviewing channelers who channel beings from other dimensional realities is one, I saw in the, being in the evidence-based ufology community, that the Citizen Hearing sort of revolves more around that world and those people. And being in that reality, I saw a lot of evidence that to prove the phenomenon is real. I saw and talked to a lot of contactees, abductees, researchers, experiencers, military people. I talked to all these people and... beyond a shadow, there's no shadow of a doubt that this is a real phenomenon and that we are being engaged by extraterrestrials. What bothered me was most of these people knew from their experiences that the phenomenon was, for the most part, a benevolent phenomenon. However, knowing that, they still perpetuated a story of fear. They still perpetuated an idea that there still might be a boogeyman behind the curtain that's going to get you, even though they've been behind the curtain and they've experienced it themselves. The reason why is because they themselves have been, have bought into the idea that the only way to get this information out is to perpetuate a story of fear. And that's essentially how major mainstream media operates is, for example, Ancient Aliens, which has done a huge service to humanity to bringing this message out. They still always end with, maybe it could be mean, or it could be evil, or it could be good or bad. We really don't know, but evidence seems to say that it's positive, but I still think it might be bad. You know, that's how they always kind of end that stuff. And in a sense, the mainstream media, in order for you to put out a message, if it doesn't have that spin, it won't go out there. Or it hasn't up until the truth embargo, I think, ended in 2017. Or I should say became starting to break up, where there's still a truth embargo, but it's being, the waters are very muddy. So even I had all of that experience, and then I started interviewing the channelers, and they started fitting all the pieces of the puzzle and just confirming stuff I already knew. And my research had brought me to these things. And then I started to get a bigger worldview picture of, oh, okay, there's no way we're going to break those power structures from the outside being in, or from even participating in that game. In a sense, it's like a slow drip type of disclosure. Yes, there's aliens. Could they be evil? Could they? Like, I already know. Why do we have to go through that stage? I already know they're benevolent. I already know we can communicate with them. I already know we can get energy exchange and get some information and free energy and all this stuff. Like, these are already things I've already researched and know, but why do we have to beat around the bush in this media structure? Because, well, people may not want it and they do this and there's all this thing. No, that's an excuse. The people want this information. You don't want it being the filter or the guy, and I say you, meaning the media structure that's releasing this is the one that's the gatekeepers of the information that are funneling all information and disseminating it to their own means to the people. And that's, therein lies the problem. Mm-hmm. So I had to go outside of that structure, because I had a production company in the marina. I was doing visual effects, working on major, you know, AAA video games, working on the film Avatar. I was already at the top of the top of where you could be. And yet I couldn't get this information out there, even though people wanted it, the producers from the networks wanted it, it would get shut down from the top. And then going through the citizen hearing, I was realizing, okay, there's something, there is a truth embargo. There's something about this. So I thought, okay, I need to create my own show, self-distribute on Vimeo, and talk in almost a secret code where people who resonated with the information to just get it and then digest it that way. And then I did that for a couple of years. And then Gaia, being open to all kinds of stuff, said, hey, we really like your show. A lot of people on our team want us to have the show. And I'm like, I'd love for you guys to have the show so you get it out there to a bigger audience. That would be great. So then that's when they picked it up. And then they put it out there. And it's, again, it seems to be really resonating with a lot of people. This idea that we're not, that the evil reptilians aren't here to drink our blood and dissect us and turn us into slaves, that there's an actual positive message behind all this, you know. And by default, by program, a lot of us still subscribe to these fear-based stories because that's what we've grown up and that's what we've known and that's what's comfortable. So for a lot of us, it's just a matter of comfort that we subscribe to these old stories. But I know there's a new story. I know there's a positive story here, and enough people are telling the old story. I need to focus on the new one.
I love that. It's so perfect for right now. Anyway, we're in the precipice of so much change and shifting going on that makes complete sense that would also be the same energy out into the universe and the universe back to us. And it's clear from your bio that you yourself, while you're working on Avatar, Ruben, you have experience. What was your UFO experience? Was it only one? Was it several? And how did that all start?
It was pretty basic. If you go as you being in this world as well as me now, we've had some pretty intense experiences. But the first one for me, it was just some white specks in the sky. You know, and I say that nonchalantly. At the time, my mind was blown and I was like, what the hell's going on? But, you know, looking back on it, it could have just been satellites or something, you know, some other kind of aerial phenomenon. But it was all I needed to unplug me from the matrix, in a sense, to my good friend Jeremy Corbell. What he says is weaponize my curiosity, was weaponized from that event. And that's all I needed. Was a small event like that to happen so I could start following the breadcrumbs to lead me to where we are today. Mm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I mentioned I blame you for...
you blame me.
I blame you fully for all the weird looks that anybody who's known me for a really long time in my life, if I start to share currently... I can't say what I'm into. That is so wrong. That's like saying I'm suddenly into watching soccer games. It actually feels like this huge space in my life has been opened in the best possible way. But it is because my partner, Rob, was watching your show, was crazy about it, and was like, no, you got to see this. You got to see this. I'm like, I'm sitting down, I'll watch one, you know, and then we would find something compelling. And I'm like, okay, I know truth. I feel energy. So yes. I know when I'm hearing something and it's resonating. And I'm one of those people who was a bit of an eye roller, like, that's cool. I mean, it makes sense that we're not the only ones, but at the same time, like, kind of, Anyway, I just kept watching because the truth kept emanating and I was loving what I was hearing and seeing. And I really liked the way you did it. I thought the take you have, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could have done the show, but the way you did the show just felt so good and right and made me want to watch more. And then I've had many people on my show now that you've had and, you know, met you at one of these contact workshops, and it's just, it's wonderful, frankly. And I agree with you, shifting from what we've been fed, even by movies that we've watched over time and sci-fi books, this yep. terror of what could happen and the control they could have, to yep. suddenly saying, no, this is a beautiful opening to a much deeper reciprocal relationship that's actually been going on for a really long time.
Yep.
So I want to know, so for the series, so whatever, here's somebody saying, you've impacted me. You've opened me up to a whole world I feel like I probably in some level have always been open to, but now so consciously and awarely. So thank you for that. Thank you for that, for that service. What was your goal? What was your reason? Besides what you shared already, but like, did you want to get something out of it? Is there something you're hungry for that you're seeking with these people that you hope or have already received?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of contact, of interacting with a being from another civilization, to me, that is some of the most exciting idea, news, possibility thing that I could possibly ever think of or imagine. Now, we watch movies and we say it's science fiction, but yet we have evidence, and I know this from doing the hearings and doing my other research, we have physical and eyewitness testimony that dates back literally thousands of years of people communicating with beings from other dimensional realities, both physically and mentally. Now, the evidence supports that reality exists. So it's not necessarily science fiction. So if it's not science fiction and these people are having these experiences, why can't I have these experiences? If that's exciting to me, what's holding that back? What's holding me back from having these experiences? And what's holding society back from having these experiences? And that's what I chose to focus and investigate and put a lot of attention into. And I found through the technology, I call it technology of channeling, that we can have access to these beings through this unique technology, which a lot of people will, you know, call woo-woo and crazy or whatever, but I've had enough experiences, obviously, through my show to prove that is a valid technology to access a dialogue and communication with these beings. In addition to that, we have other technologies with plant medicines. We have meditation. We have breath work. There's a lot of different modalities that we can do to get us closer to bridging these different worlds. And that, in my opinion, when I think about all the different stories, science fiction stories I could write or I could try to imagine or develop as a filmmaker, that's where I kind of started as an actor and then became a filmmaker. To me, that is the most exciting story, the greatest story that we could possibly imagine of all of our storytelling. It's actually happening right now. And my goal with all of this is to simply take what's happening out there, put a magnifying glass or a lens on that and say, look, world, this is us. This is humans. We are far greater than any of our science fiction or any of the stories that are being told to us in society right now, all we got to do is just choose where to put that lens.
And how much team do you have working with you? Are you like a guerrilla production company? Like you're doing the interview, you're getting all the cameras set up and, you know, making sure the audio is okay. Are you doing the editing, or do you actually have a production team working for and with you?
Well, most of it's me. Season one was all me. Season two. Being up here, I live in Big Bear, California, which is about 2.5 hours outside of LA. And I've been a one man band for a few years, but I met a good fellow brother named Steve Copeland, who's helping me. He came on board and started helping me with season two. And about halfway through season two, helped with the shoots and then definitely helping with the editing. And so now it's just me and him, you know, mostly me with the show. And we've got some other projects we're working on together that he's putting a little more attention into those while I try to get season three up and released, and he'll jump in and help me out. But yeah, essentially it's me and him and that's it.
I know you've done some like a lot of amazing shows, a lot of amazing interviews, very riveting. So I don't want to play favorites, but I would really love to know on a personal level, Ruben, was there somebody that you brought on the show who literally changed the trajectory for you? Something opened up or really surprised you? You got something or learned something that really made a significant difference?
Well, I have to say, the idea of the show came from Wendy Kennedy and Nora Harold, Wendy Kennedy, and Daryl Anka. They were all coming to my, I used to hold ET Media meetup groups on Tuesday nights at my studio in the marina back in 2010 to 2014. And they grew from being just a small handful of people to being, you know, almost 100 people at a night. We had the space to house it. So it was the first Tuesday of every month, and they just kept growing and growing. And then Wendy and Nora and Daryl used to come to these events. I didn't know they were channelers. I knew what the channeling phenomenon was. I didn't really pay much attention to it. I was just all about the evidence stuff. Give me the real goods. You know, that was how I looked at it. And after one night of the meetings, I was just chatting with Wendy because she had mentioned in her introduction that she was a contactee and she had been brought in on the ships. And I had discussed with a lot of people at that time, I was fascinated with that experience and that phenomenon. And I started interviewing, I don't have record of these, but I probably interviewed well over 100 contactees around that time, trying to compare their experiences and understand the phenomenon even more. And so I was kind of interviewing her, picking her brain. So what's going on? And she said, I was brought in on the ship, the Zetas. They were taking my eggs and DNA and the usual story. And then she said, it was okay. I wasn't afraid because I knew it was a soul contract. And then it was like a light bulb went off in my head. A soul contract? What? Wait. That's for some reason that really resonated. I don't quite understand it, but it really resonated. Tell me more. And then she started getting into it. And she says, yeah, the Palladians, the P's, they, you know, that's how they explained it to me. And I'm like, you're talking to them now? What is this? Yeah, I do this thing called channeling. I'm like, what? Oh my God, no. And then I started listening to her, started listening to Nora, and I started listening to Daryl, Anka, and Bashar. And then it started really making a lot of sense. Like all of the research I had been doing up until that point, and all the question marks were getting filled in with the information. And I was like, but some of these people, some of these channelers don't have access to the information that I've had talking to these individual whistleblowers and behind the scenes people and the hundreds of contactees that I had interacted with. These people aren't there with their research. How do they know this stuff? That's what was blowing my mind. So all of the missing puzzle pieces were getting filled in. And that's when I knew, okay, this is the direction I need to go with my show, is to fill in the puzzle pieces. And to what I noticed that I really resonated with, the messages were, they were all self-empowering as opposed to victimization stories that the a lot of the abductees would subscribe to. They would, you could see the fear and you could see how disempowered they were by believing and buying into the fear, where I could look at somebody like Wendy who said, it's a soul contract that I signed up for this. I agreed prior to this incarnation to donate my genetic material for these experiments. I saw how she carried that. Whether it's true or not, it didn't matter, because she was a more empowered being in how she carried her life and her day-to-day, just how she carried herself compared to someone who was, I was brought on the ships and they took me and I don't want it again, you know. And then you could see how it just trickled into their life, how that person was unstable and not trustworthy and the fear, and there's all this other stuff. So I was like, okay, here's where I need to put my focus. Whether it's true or not, I will figure that out on my direction. But what I want, is self-empowerment. I want people who may be having these experiences, but are able to use it in a positive light and not a negative one.
Yeah, beautiful. I noticed one of your episodes was with Lee McCloskey. Mm-hmm. I was invited to his home to do a sound bath. So it was cool. Interesting to see that you went in and filmed there. For people who don't know him or his house or this man, oh my God, will you describe what it's like inside his home and what he's done?
Well, Lee's a modern day wizard.
Yes.
And it's funny because a lot of people watch that episode and they say it just went over their head. And I think it's one of the most advanced episodes there is, because of Lee's deep knowledge into the esoteric and into the tarot and into all of these different ideas and subjects, and the and what he channels through his art is phenomenal. And all of the pieces, though he used a different vernacular and he has a little bit different background, I actually used Lisa Royale's chart for the different civilizations. And we overlapped that in with his ideas and archetypes and explanations, and everything fit like a perfect glove. How you, it's just different language, but these archetypes and these ET races, or you know, esoteric archetypes like the tarot, they're one and the same. And that's what I wanted to sort of prove, was this idea of ETs. It's just the language. It's a concept that some of us gravitate towards this way, or we can gravitate this way. And I'm a big fan of ETs. I want to go ride in spaceships. That's my other selfish reason why I'm doing all this. It's probably the main reason, actually, is I just one day I want to go for a ride in a spaceship. That's it. Even though I probably go up there every night, but I want to remember it, and I want to be able to, you know, I want to be able to, like, you know, physically go in there and then like come out and say, that was cool. All right, let's go and do another ride or whatever. But Lee is he's an amazing being, and I was super excited. I had done an interview with in season one, Aneana. I did it in his backyard there. And then I was thinking, man, I got to get Lee himself on the show. So season two, we made that happen.
Yeah. And you have to, people, you have to watch the episode, because I honestly don't know. I could get very animated about this. I could use the best descriptive words. But when I say that this man has painted every inch of his upstairs, including on the books and the bookshelves and the ceiling and the sofa,
even underneath the sofa cushions.
Yes, even in hidden places.
And it's all in 3D.
It's all 3D, and he's a brilliant artist, and he's a genius. I'm sure he's not from here. Yeah. I don't even understand the level at which he channels information and talks about what he does and perceives, but
yeah,
it's really worth watching. There's nothing like it. I've never seen anything like it. And yep. Ruben, you mentioned earlier that in season two, you brought in a friend, colleague, Steve Copeland. Mm-hmm. He's helping out. He has other projects. So that leads me to ask you this question, because mm-hmm. you and Steve were working on film video mm-hmm. called Mission to Maya. And you and the filmmaker, you're on this yeah. sacred journey. You go yeah. into the highlands of Guatemala. You're going to yeah. go visit a Mayan elder. Awesome. You're in the car. You're just sort of filming on your phone as you're getting directions and getting lost about where you're going.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden, after arriving in Guatemala, you get shot at. And this is like really seriously shot mm-hmm. at. So you talk about, tell me what happened. And did you ever get to the bottom of what occurred and why?
On a physical level, no, but spiritually, yes.
Hmm.
Basically, so we had gone down there. So Steve had produced and directed a film called Shift of the Ages, came out in 2012. It was sort of following Tata Alejandro, who is sort of still is the main Mayan elder of the Mayan people. And the documentary sort of goes about his life and his teachings and how he had trouble with this several thousand year old relic called the corn staff. That was sort of the symbol for the Mayan people. And anyways, I highly recommend watching the movie. You can see it on Vimeo for free, Shift of the Ages. So we were kind of shooting around an idea to do a part two of that together. And we had gotten word that Tata was not feeling well. And we may have had lost him at that time. He was on oxygen and it's not doing so good. So we thought, well, we gotta go down there and get him on film and perhaps pass the torch, the energetic torch, fulfilling the eagle and the condor prophecy. And we brought Chief Phil Lang, who is of the Dakota tribe and sort of a major symbol in the for North American indigenous peoples. He does a lot of public speaking and is out there and talking about the prophecies and a lot of the stories from the Native American indigenous tribes. So we brought him down and we were able to have them meet and had a ceremony, and there's a lot of weird things happened sort of around that. But as soon as we did it, Chief Phil was like adamant, we got to go straight to the airport right now. Get me on a plane right now. And we're like, Chief, we still got a bunch of filming to do. We can't, like, this is all on our own dime. Come on, man, don't do this. And he's like, no, get me. The vultures are coming. They're out to get me. Get me on a plane right now. So we literally drove straight from from Tata's house. It was like a 3-hour, 4-hour drive to Guatemala City. Took him back to the airport. Everyone was exhausted. Had to do some mind magic to get him on the plane, some Jedi magic to get him on the plane, because it was before he was supposed to go. And then he was gone, and we're like, oh, okay, whew. All right, now what do you do? So Steve and I were like, well, let's go get some B-roll without him, whatever. So we went back to, we're staying with this woman named Elizabeth, who is also a Mayan elder. And sort of regrouped, and then we decided to go out and we were going to go to the pyramids and film some B-roll. And on the way there is when we missed a turn and Google rerouted us through, you know, some neighborhoods, and it's the middle of the day. It seemed fine. We were in heavy, heavy traffic, people everywhere. And all of a sudden the back window gets blown out. I thought it was somebody throwing a brick or something from a second story on our roof. I didn't know what's going on. And then in what you see in the video, I thought somebody was after us to get our cameras or something. So by instinct, I just threw the camera under the seat. But what happened right after that was a guy with a gun came running up to the car, trying to get into the car. Couldn't get in. And then I literally was looking right down the barrel, was coming right up to me. And that's when I realized this guy's not here to try to get into the car to get the cameras. He's here to get us. And that's when I screamed to Steve, go, go, go. we were in gridlock traffic. Steve went on the other side of the street, coming head on to traffic. We went up on the sidewalk, and this guy just unloaded the clip almost at point blank as we're driving away. And luckily, the bullets wasn't right here, but we were in movement, peeling out, getting away as he's unloading his clip. And he's shooting inside the car, all this plastic and pieces and stuff. And I felt something hit me in the back, and I was like, oh shit, am I it? And you're like, what's going on here? Adrenaline's going, Steve's peeling out. We're going, you know, this is like a crazy movie, going over through the traffic, going head on against traffic and weeding the way in and out. We come to a couple stops. I look in the rearview mirror or in the side mirror, because we can't even see out the back window because it's all broken glass, shattered glass. And the guy's just booking it up the hill and with the gun. I'm like, dude, he's still coming. It's like the Terminator, you know, you just, it's like, go, Steve. And he just, and then we finally go down and around and we get into this gridlock stop. It's nothing, like everything just stopped. And it was probably about 2-3 minutes, but it was the longest 2-3 minutes of my life, looking in the rearview mirror, thinking about every scenario that could possibly happen. Is this, if this guy comes around the corner, we're just sitting ducks. We're in the car, you know, obviously this car is not bulletproof. Bullets came through, you know, do we sit here? Do I go for a run? If I bust out and run, is Steve going to be okay? You know, all these things running through my head without words, and just like, you probably, you know, in the movies when you hear that heartbeat moment, and then the loud, you know, that loud sound, the that's still going because I'm just point blank, bullets just went off in my ear. Then luckily, traffic starts to move. Steve muscles his way, and we're cutting people off to get in front. And then finally, we got into a main highway. And I kept looking back, feeling, am I hit, you know? And then later we get out and check, and a bullet, yeah, it was just a little metal plate in the seat. And then one of the bullets had lodged into that plate. So it did tap me in the back, but luckily it didn't pierce skin or anything. There's another bullet that lodged in to the window, where if it had been just an entire, it would have gone right into my head. So kind of looking back at that as, okay, we had some craziness, but some divine protection, obviously. Those kind of things don't happen.
I would say you absolutely had divine intervention, because you also filmed, it looks like the car is somewhere on top of a building, finally, somewhere
we're at the car rental return.
Oh my God, can you imagine? Yeah.
And we're like, hey, sorry guys. And they're like, what the hell? And I'm like, does this not happen all the time? Is this a common thing? And they're like, no, you're our first customer. And I'm like, are you sure?
I can imagine. You're filming the first time you've stopped long enough to look at the car. And one of you says, I think there's a bullet at the front windshield. And the other says, no, I don't think so. And the other one goes closer, and there you are pulling it out. And then you're navigating the whole car, including that back seat. I mean, that one for me was a gasper, because there is no doubt, like a millionth, right? A centimeter. Yep. And you would have been done for. And so you mentioned that you never found out physically, but that you did spiritually. What did you mean by that? Meaning you found out spiritually what this was about.
Well, so when you're the story of Shift the Ages and the story of there is, I think, a natural law to a certain extent to how people are gaining information to these realities in this world. And it's happening from one perspective, it's happening in a very controlled, bottlenecked, you know, saying the media and these outlets that are intentionally disseminating the information for the people, so to say, sort of making up their mind. It's not by our free will that this information is being suppressed for special interest groups and these other things. But just like Wendy Kennedy said, it's a soul contract. So to another extent, from another angle, is we signed up to be in this time under these repressive oligarchy type rules in this reality. And when you start pushing against something, it's going to push back. And I think we were just getting a little too close to some truths. Like, again, all truths are true, but we're getting a little too close to some of these ideas. And when you start messing with agendas and people in high places and power structures. And I had this with Citizen Hearing. I had the same thing kind of happen to me. I had some really interesting, strange visitations from government people, and these kinds of weird things started happening. And then, you know, my life again soon fell apart financially right after that due to a bunch of mysterious things, which I won't go into. But there's many angles to how these things play out. And when you start pushing too hard in one direction, you get resistance back. And I feel in that sense, this was a nice, adventurous, but yet controlled and divine intervention, in the sense that this is as far as we need to go, and then Ruben will, Steve will get the lesson, and then they can move and shift their focus somewhere else. And don't worry, evil shadow people or whatever is behind the veil on that side, you can continue your work as usual. Ruben and Steve will continue their work somewhere else. And I felt that's what that was.
So Ruben, here you are, you're a professional, you're paid as a stuntman, yeah. You're a professional fighter for film and television and video games, you're a video game star, and here you are in a real life situation. It's not a movie, there's not that camera. Did you ever, at any point, when the gun is being pointed at you, thought, I know martial arts, or I know a way out of this?
No. No. No, it's not like in the movies at all. It is definitely, there was an amazing amount of fear and adrenaline rushing through my body at an extremely high rate that I wouldn't want to wish on anybody. And I don't think there's no amount of training that can prepare you for that. Now, there are real world experiences, and you talk to, you know, these people who've been in the wars and been in in different government positions, who play that game on a daily basis. So they're more used to having the gun pointed at them. They're used to having, real live fire coming at them from every direction. So I think the more you expose yourself to it, you do get, there's a certain amount of getting used to it and then being able to operate in a more calm fashion under those stresses. But to be honest, my jaw dropped and I was like, what the hell just happened? This is supposed to be something that only happens in the movies. Mm. And it took a little bit. I was on high alert for a couple of months after that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you have PTSD? How did that play out?
I did. I was able to deal with it pretty quick, thanks to some medicine journeys and some. Also, we did a Mayan fire ceremony right after that, because we were staying with one of the major Mayan elders, and like that was one of the big, reliefs. Like after that, I felt really much more grounded and centered after that ceremony. But I think another part of me invited that in so I could understand PTSD a little bit better, and because I have on the side another documentary I'm working on through ayahuasca and the medicine. And been filming some soldiers and people who've dealt with PTSD. So now I can relate to them as a filmmaker much better, having gone and and feeling and going through those experiences myself. So, so anyways, I think there's a reason for all of this in many ways, but on that level, for sure, having to deal with those, with that, that type of trauma, and then in processing it, and, you know, it's something that will always live with me, obviously. I'll probably, but now I can, you know, it's more of like, oh yeah, that happened. I forgot that happened. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up. And I'm not scared of talking about it or anything. I'm not traumatized in a negative way. I'm like, oh yeah, it happened. It was, and, it was just fascinating. And here we are, we're talking about it.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
I'm sorry you went through that.
No, I'm happy I went through it.
Hmm.
Because again, it allows me this different perspective on things that I can see now, having gone through that. And at the end of the day, it was just insurance money out of the car. It was took 6 months to get the insurance money, but it was a lot. And there was a lot of that, you know, more traumatized trying to get my insurance money than the trauma from the shooting. But at the end of the day, nobody was hurt that I know. I don't know. Hopefully, no stray bullets hit anybody on the street. But I wasn't hurt. Steve wasn't hurt. You know, who knows about the guy that pulled the trigger, what he's dealing with. But, it, you know, at the end of the day, that's the truth, is nobody was hurt. So, yeah, life goes on.
What is something, Ruben, we don't know about you? What's something surprising or interesting about you that you can share?
Surprise. Well, I got to work with James Cameron and Peter Jackson and Steven Spielberg.
And one of my favorite cartoons, by the way, I grew up as a child because my father was Austrian, very European, Belgian and all that. Yeah. Tintin.
Well, I was working on set on Tintin doing some of the tests, and it was me and one other stunt actor working with Andy Serkis. Mm. And I had all three directors right there in this intimate setting working the scene. You know, we're doing the scene together. And I'm like, what? It doesn't get any better than this. You can't, as an actor, the pinnacle of my acting career still will be that moment when all three directors are exchanging notes and working with this technology. And I'm working with Peter Jackson Spielberg and Andy Serkis, and just seeing the level of professionalism and respect and mutual respect they all had for each other and craft that went into making the scene. I was like, yep, doesn't get any better than this.
That's pretty cool. Did you ever try to play it really cool and like try to do a selfie with them in the background?
So the stunt coordinator, he wanted that, those types of things, those types of pictures and things. For me, I was like, whatever, it is what it is. But I actually got in trouble because he ordered me. He's the one who brought me on. So in a sense, I was indebted to him. So he says, Ruben, here's the camera, take some pictures, you know? So I'm taking pictures of him, you know, and then I get yelled at, of course. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, it's,
Busted.
Busted.
Funny, you know, you mentioned that when you were a kid, you were a nerd, not into sports at all. So when you say you were a nerd, what kind of nerd are we talking about? Were you like a book nerd? Were you a gamer nerd?
Comic books and games. Yeah, those were the two. Huge, huge Street Fighter fan. I used to go to the arcades and play, not professionally, but I'd go and look for challenges in the arcade for the strongest Street Fighter player, and read a lot of comic books, mostly Japanese manga comics that are popular now. I was very much a nerd in the sense that I wasn't a jock, didn't play any sports, never did any drugs, stayed away from parties, just hung out with my nerd friends, and we just nerd out on, you know, on comics and video games.
Do you think it paid off? Do you think having been like that, like funneled into who you are today?
Absolutely. Because now I get, so I used to go to these anime, are you familiar with the anime Comic-Con culture?
Somewhat, yeah. Okay. Not probably as deep as you.
These conventions have gotten huge. Like Comic-Con is just off the charts. And this year has been a sad year for that industry. Yeah. But so I used to go, I used to pay money and go to Dragon Con. This is in Atlanta. Mm. And some of these smaller conventions. And just the nerd out, you know, to play the role playing, to play Dungeons and Dragons, and to see the get the autographs of these people that most people don't know or care about, but it's like, oh, that's the creator of, you know, the whatever, or you know, seeing some of the Star Trek actors, you know, and you're like, oh my god, that's got some Star Trek, it's so cool, you know, or even the writer, like, oh, that's the writer. It's the writer from this comic book series. You know, in normal world, these people aren't really big celebrities, but in that world, they're huge. So what's interesting is now I'm one of those people. Now I get invited to these conventions because of my work in video games and films. I go to these conventions and I sign autographs, and I'm seeing myself 20, 30 years ago. As these people are coming up to me and asking me for my autograph. So in that sense, it's gone full circle. And I'm just like, yeah. And I totally can resonate with those people because I've been there. That's where I got my roots. And that was my driving force for becoming the person I am and going and doing the investigations and moving to Japan, learning martial arts and doing, you know, having the ET stuff too. Cause now I get invited to ED UFO conventions as well. So I'm like in that camp and I'm over here in this camp. Got all these different camps that I'm hanging out in. And I would just wish these people knew about, if this world knew about this world, oh my God, and if that world knew about that world, oh my God, it would be, what an amazing world this would be. But we're getting there slowly. So I hope to be a bridge between a lot of these worlds. And that's a lot of my work and focus. And what I do is again, I think we can all get along and have a good time if we just see each other's worlds from a different perspective.
I'm so glad you came on the show today. I'm very grateful to have you on. So first, I just want to say thank you so much, Ruben, for sharing yourself and your vision and your work out into the world.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so for people who are watching, who are listening, there is going to be a part two. You can tell there's a lot to talk about here. Ruben was just mentioning bridging worlds. So we're going to do even more of that because he's brought up things like doing medicine ceremony. And I want to deep dive into that and a little bit of his Japanese background culture. And all of that and more and even more. So stick around for those of you who are ready for part two. And for those of you who are listening on radio, you'll have to look us up for part two. If you want to learn more about him, go to RubenLangdon.com. Subscribe to Dare to Dream podcast. This is your number one transformation conversation. My guest next week is Scarlett Raven. She is a plant spirit channel and a starseed visionary. Her newest book is Psilocybin Transmissions, a channeled book from the spirit of psilocybin. Scarlett's company is White Fox Medicinals, serving high vibrational organic medicine to people through award-winning medicinal products. I mean, she's been written up in major magazines and papers. And so this is a legit big time company with herbs, with CBD, with cannabis, with psilocybin since 2007. And her tools are all about creating wholeness. If you love the show, tell your friends and family. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for leaving a comment. We adore you for it. And I do read everything that you leave for me. And I end today's show with this quote from the Dalai Lama. We Buddhists have always held that firm conviction that there exists life and civilization on other planets in the many systems of the universe, and some of them are so highly developed that they are superior to our own. Thanks for listening to Dare to Dream.
To contact the award-winning syndicated Dare to Dream radio show, go to debbiedashinger.com. Keep your excellent feedback and comments coming. Your host, Debbie Dashinger, is an expert at goal achievement, a media personality, an international best-selling author, and a keynote speaker. Debbie leads high-quality teleseminars on how to achieve goals, how to be a self-published best-selling author, and how to get booked on radio. All classes are at debbiedashinger.com. Debbie's best-selling books are Dare to Dream, This Life Counts, sold on Amazon, and her second book, Wisdom to Success, The Secrets to Accomplish All Your Dreams, sold online at all bookstores. Tune in again to hear the next inspiring interview guest who has turned their vision into a successful reality. Want more support in making your dreams come true? Go to DebbieDashinger.com. That's www.DebbieDashinger.com. You'll see videos, MP3s, archived interviews, and amazing products sharing the secret steps to making your dreams come true. Remember to dream big with every expectation that your dream will become real. Dreams are free, so free your dreams. What do you dare to dream?
I'm standing now, waiting for my time to be here.